Well, once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, December 12th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next 45 minutes or so. We're going over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me. As one guest joins me on the program here today, that is professional handicapper Brad Powers from bradpowerssports.com. We'll talk Army-Navy. We'll talk bowl season, some early thoughts. We'll talk week 15 in the NFL. Then we'll get you on your way here with a little bit of a shorter edition of the show. Tomorrow are two regular segments, my Super Contest segment, then Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the Odds Report. So that's how we'll finish up this week here on Bang the Book Radio. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Handwritten previews coming your way on all of the college football bowl games, including the Celebration Bowl between North Carolina A&T and Alcorn State. So we'll have all those for you to check out as we go throughout the days here over at bangthebook.com, trying to get as many of those done in a reasonable amount of time for you as we can. We've also got daily NHL, NBA, and college basketball coverage. Plenty of stuff every week in the NFL as well. We got our YouTube videos over on our Bang the Book YouTube page. You can check out archived segments of Bang the Book Radio. Tons of stuff going on over there at the website. Make sure you check it all out. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200, is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. One guest, one segment on the program here today, that is professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, brother?
Man, it's going well. How are you doing on this fine Thursday?
Doing very well, man. Appreciate your time as always here, sir. Thank you so much for joining me. And let's go ahead and talk about this here because we've got the bowl season left. We've got Army-Navy, the last game of the regular season. Usually I wait until the end of the season to go over some of these things. But with the regular season in the books, looking back at what you did here for this season, what worked for you? What didn't? What are you going to look to adjust as you start looking at those 2020 power ratings and, you know, await season win totals and games of the year and all that?
I mean, great question. I mean, I did not have a good college season by any stretch of the imagination. So, I mean, it's kind of complicated. I'm really going to take a deep look into, you know, several things for me because it's not just been one subpar year for me. It's not been several in a row. I had my best season ever last year and had one of my worst seasons ever this year. So, I mean, smaller sample sizes, I mean, you don't want to overreact too much, but I'm going to take a good hard look on the college side of what I'm specifically doing wrong. Now, I will say, you know, I'm never an excuses guy. I'm just not. I mean, you just got to sack it up and take the responsibility for your actions, whether they be good or bad, and your results. But, you know, I was listening to one of the guys from the Westgate, and he was just saying how historically short their hold percentage is in college football this year on sides, like 2% at the Westgate. So, I mean, to me, that's a leading indicator that when on college sides, you know, one of the sharper books in town, the Westgate's only holding like 2%. I mean, to me, that's saying that the public had a pretty good college football season. And if the public has a really good college football season, chances are that, you know, because I'm so contrarian, chances are I'm not going to have a good college season. So that might explain a little bit of it, but certainly I got to go back to the drawing board for me. I'm not going to throw everything in the waste paper basket, but, you know, I'm looking at a 5-6 year, you know, past results here. And it's just, I haven't gotten the job done in college.
Well, I mean, I think it's one of those things, too, where, you know, you will have some of these outlier seasons, especially as you mentioned, that hold percentage number is incredible. I mean,
yeah,
books generally want to be, you know, 5 to 6%, if not higher. So that's extremely low on the college football side. And maybe it's just one of those years, and, you know, we've talked about it a lot this season. There's really good, there's really bad, and everybody in between has been, you know, kind of interchangeable on a conference level. So, you know, sometimes it's just difficult to adjust to that where teams are just remarkably inconsistent and sometimes things just kind of don't fall your way. But again, you've got plenty of time to take a look at it here before the season win totals wind up coming out and those games of the year and all that. And I have no doubt that you'll bounce back and make the necessary adjustments that you need to here for the 2020 season. We've got one game left here in the college football regular season. It is Army-Navy, the standalone game. This time it comes in week 16 on December 14th. Navy, a 10.5-point favorite here, despite losing this game the last 3 years. And this, of course, as we know, being a very competitive, generally low-scoring type of rivalry. That's a big number here for the middies.
It is, but, I mean, it makes some sense if you start just going, what's the strength or lack thereof in Army's case of this year's team? I mean, and Navy's been super impressive. I mean, we talked a little bit before the segment. Navy, I've upgraded about 15 points in my power rankings since the start of the season. That's more than any other team in the country. So, I mean, it makes some sense because Navy had an historically bad season last year. They had their worst season in almost two decades last season. So they've certainly rebounded and made some staff changes. Ken Niumatalolo doesn't usually have a lot of staff turnover, but I think he hired six new assistant coaches, most of it on the defense side of the ball. And both offensively and defensively, they've been much improved this year. And I mean, they're on track. If they can win these last two games, this game and against Kansas State in the bowl game, I mean, Navy's going to tie the record for most wins in school history with that Keenan Reynolds team from 3-4 years ago. On the other side, Army, I could argue, has been the biggest disappointment in college football this year. And I'll just hark to their season win total, which was sitting right around 9.5. The fact that they're only sitting at 5 and they're a clear underdog in this one. I mean, no other team in college football has fallen short of their season win total by 4.5 wins this year. So on one side, Navy's the most improved team in my power rings, and Army has certainly fallen short, and it's not like Army's played an overly difficult schedule. And there's another advantage for Navy here. They played the much tougher strength of schedule this season.
Yeah, I have Navy up 18.5 points in my power ratings from where I started with them. I have Army down 11.5 points. So massive adjustments for these two teams. And last year, I was correct in Navy. My biggest season win total was to go under with Navy, and they were terrible last year, as you mentioned, coming off one of the worst seasons in program history. Part of that had to do with an egregiously bad travel schedule. They just had no breaks over the course of the season at all. This year's travel schedule, much better. And you've got to give them credit, too, because one of the things I harped on with them last year was now that they're in the AAC and they've been there for a little while, teams are more equipped to go and defend that option. They have a better idea of what's coming. They don't have to be as lost on game day as they were. But then this year, Navy made some adjustments, and their option attack was much more potent, and they had a lot more success here in conference play. So shame on me, I guess, for not looking at last year as a one-year outlier. I got to say, as insane as this is, because, again, you've got a total here where it's finally correctly priced in the market, that this game goes under every single year, total of 40.5. This game has been very close. Like the last 5 years, it's been single digits. I kind of like Navy this week because they've been so much better, because they have so much stronger of a body of work. But, man, that's a tall ask laying double digits in this head-to-head series.
Yeah, so since Jeff Monken was hired at Army, he's the Army head coach. I mean, he's been there 5 years, and all 5 years have been decided by 7 points or less. So they've been really tight. Now, clearly, you know, before this period, you know, Navy certainly had control of the series. I mean, even multiple blowout wins in that one. You know, the trend line of the two teams obviously is really disparate here this season, but I just got to think with a really low total. I mean, the fact that the unders cashed 13 straight years in this series, and I'm not lining up to go bet over 40.5. I just think it's going to be extremely difficult to get margin when you got that kind of a low total. So I am leaning towards the Army side here, and I will have a small Army ticket here, plus a 10.5, plus 11.
And you have to, right? You know, being the only game of the weekend.
I don't have to do anything. That's the beauty of the books. I mean, the books, you always got to lay the 110 over the books, but the beauty is we can pick and choose what games we want to bet, so I don't have to do anything.
Yeah, you do. You got to support the servicemen and women with a ticket on one side, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah, I hear you. I like watching the game, and it's clearly, if you look at the TV ratings last 10, 15 years, I mean, I'm very happy that this game has become one of the more watched games of the entire season. From a college football fan, I love it. And I'll be perfectly frank. It's on the bucket list. If I have done something wrong in my life, if I never attend an Army Navy game.
Speaking of that, this is a neutral setting again this year. It was a neutral setting last year. They actually played away and home in 2016 and 2017. Army was the home team there in Army was the home team in 2016, Navy in 2017. I kind of wish that this was, you know, a home away thing as opposed to a neutral site thing. I think that would kind of enhance the rivalry a little bit.
Are you sure they play? They didn't play home away those 2 years.
No.
No.
It's always been neutral then?
Yeah, it's always been neutral since I've been watching it. I'm going to look right now, but yeah, I'm almost dead positive that they didn't play.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. I'm mistake there on that one. In any event, still a great game. Again, that standalone game. And, you know, it's kind of fun to watch the two option teams go head to head a little bit. Not necessarily if you've been sitting on an over ticket the last 13 years, but you know, otherwise it's still a whole lot of fun to, you know, watch this game. And I certainly hope that everybody at least takes some time on Saturday to check this one out. You know, because again, it is generally a very competitive game. And you know, obviously with the big number here on, there are some 11s popping out there. You know, we'll see what happens here with this one, but bowl games start December 20th, Brad. We've got a lot of them. Buffalo, Charlotte, Kent State, Utah State starts things off. We'll go in depth on some of the Friday, Saturday, and you know, so on games in next week's segment. But just looking overall here in general at the bowl picture, Brad, are there any games that you've taken a position on so far?
I have, real quick, because you always intrigue my interest. Last time these two teams played home and away, Army Navy, 1942 and 43.
All right.
Here's
so I was only off by a little bit.
Right? it's all right. They normally play, it's either usually Philadelphia or Baltimore. Here's one that I had no idea, and I'm sorry I'm going off beat a little bit. In 83, the year I was born, I was just a couple months old, they played the Rose Bowl, Pasadena, California.
What?
That'd have been something.
That'd have been
I had no idea that was the case, that they'd never done that.
Wow.
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah, the hell. Do it again. At some point in time, they should do it again, just for, maybe like the 50-year anniversary. I mean, assuming we're all still walking the planet at that point in time. Maybe the 50-year anniversary would be cool.
Yeah, there you go. Here's a couple positions I take. First one, we'll just go to next Saturday's game. I'm on SMU against Florida Atlantic. Overarching theme there, I'm fading a team with an interim coach, Florida Atlantic. And specifically, it's, you know, your interim coach has no shot at the job. They just hired Willie Taggart. So to me, there's a substitute teacher effect there with the interim and Glenn Spencer. Kiffin's already said he's going to take a couple assistant coaches with him. So are those guys really locked in and focused on game planning, or are they worried about, you know, getting their, you know, wives and their kids, you know, a new home and where they're going to be going to school next semester and whatnot? I think those are clear distractions there. SMU, another bowl variable factor that comes into play this time of year. SMU has played the much tougher schedule. You just look at Jeff Sagarin's strength of schedule rankings, about 40 spots tougher than Florida Atlantic. Back when I was working with Phil Steele, usually when we're doing bowl games, about 20 spots difference as far as strength of schedule during bowl games, we treated it like 1 point. So 40 spots different would be 2 points there on SMU. And I think SMU is just, I mean, the two teams like to do similar stuff offensively, but I just think SMU is clearly the superior team with a superior coach laying the 3. I know it's at home for Florida Atlantic, but I don't treat a lot of times that these bowl games with the home team, I don't give them full home field advantage. I think sometimes that's also a mistake there. SMU will have some fans in the stands, and I'm not even sure how excited Florida Atlantic people are going to be with Kiffin not there in that home bowl game. So SMU -3 is the position I took.
Yeah, I completely agree with this one. In fact, I wrote this preview up over at bangthebook.com yesterday, actually before Willie Taggart was named the new FAU head coach, which we'll be able to talk about that hire, of course, after all these bowl games and everything. But, you know, that was the thing that I kind of mentioned is it really home field advantage when, you know, part of the allure, part of the attraction of going to a bowl game is going and doing something different. You know, all the sponsors and the local tourism board have a bunch of stuff planned for you. You know, you go to the Hawaii Bowl, there's a luau and a bunch of other cool things you get to be involved in. You know, Hawaii, obviously for them, it's always nice to stay home and always nice to make a bowl game. But, you know, you're going to Boca Raton. I mean, what are you going to do, like, tour nursing homes or something? You know, like, the Owls aren't going to be interested in that at all. SMU, at least it's something different, a different place to go, a different state. You know, and of course, too, something else that I wrote about in my preview, and this is something you want to factor in. I'm sure we'll talk about motivation. If you want to do the Bang the Book Radio Bowl season motivation drinking game, you can definitely do that. SMU's got some NFL caliber talent. Guys like Jones, guys like Roberson, guys like Prochet, maybe even Bouchel. He'll probably stick around. Maybe after his senior year, he could be a late round pick, you know, to be a backup and hold a clipboard, something like that. These teams that have, you know, individual motivations with NFL type guys that aren't skipping the bowl game, there's a lot to be said about that. You know, sometimes that can overcome a lack of team motivation to a degree. SMU has team and individual motivation. FAU's got a couple of guys. Miko Dotson's going to go to the NFL. But beyond that, not a whole lot of, you know, surefire NFL draft picks. Not a whole lot of team motivation. That's all part of the equation to me here at this time of the year.
Certainly is this time of year. And you know, just overarching, generally speaking, I mean, however you handicap college football regular season, throw that out the window, because this is almost like an entirely different sport. And obviously, number one, first and foremost, the factor in bowl handicapping is motivation. I'd argue if you figure out the motivation factor, I mean, the chances of you having a winning bowl season are pretty substantial, especially in today's day and age, where if you're, you know, when you look at the results compared to the Vegas spread, I mean, you get some of the biggest variances and differences of any time during the course of the year, with the only thing coming close probably week one and two, just because we don't always have a great grasp of what these teams are going to be like. So, you know, obviously never tease college football, but I would say this, if you're looking to bet a dog, and I know I'm hitting a lot of points here, but I mean, so many times the underdogs, if you're looking for them to cover, a lot of the times you better be shading and putting a sprinkling in a little bit on the money line on these teams, because a lot of times dogs that cover, they win outright, and forget betting money lines on favorites, because I mean, if you're looking for the favorite to cover, chances are they cover by margin. So in that regard, I mean, huge variances when it comes to the bowl games between the Vegas spreads.
Yeah, the only position I've taken so far, I took Central Michigan at 4.5. Didn't sprinkle the money line. Shame
really?
On me for that, with that one coming down. Yeah.
I want to hear your handicap on that, because okay. I bet San Diego State -3 at Circa on Sunday.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll go first here. I guess we'll kind of switch roles here a little bit. I mean, look, you've got a Chippewas team that, you know, obviously played very well under Jim McElwain. Massive change. They had 3.8 yards per play last year on offense. 6.15 yards per play on offense here this season, this time around. McElwain at least has some level of exposure to that Rocky Long 3-3-5 defense. Saw it a little bit there when he was in the Mountain West. So I do like that a little bit. And you know, look, Central Michigan's defense is not good. I completely understand that. My line coming into this game was San Diego State -0.5. So I just think there's a little bit of value there on the Central side. But, you know, this running game for San Diego State is just abominable. I mean, it's bad. Maybe Juwan Washington's a little bit healthier for the bowl game than he's been. But 3.3 yards per carry for him, one play of 50-plus yards for San Diego State. They're not the least bit explosive here. So if they're able to slow down Central Michigan, I still don't think that they're capable of getting a whole lot of margin here in this one. McElwain's been good. Charlie Fry, former Akron Zip, he's been great as the offensive coordinator. The defense has, you know, not been great, but I think they're good enough here with extra prep time against a bad offense. I like Central here. I understand that, you know, San Diego State, I gave them a point for the game being in Albuquerque because they're more familiar with the setting and, you know, maybe it played in altitude a little bit more, but I just think Central Michigan's the better team here.
All right, fair. And you know, it goes into your yards per play. You know, Central Michigan obviously clearly much superior in that instance. I just thought San Diego State familiarity. I figured, you know, a lot of teams don't like defense, and obviously San Diego State, for much as they struggle on the offense side of the ball defensively, I mean, just looking statistically, you know, top five in yards per game, top 5 points per game, you know, yards per play, right up there. I just, You're actually beginning to question a little bit. I just thought San Diego State maybe gets a little bit of a lift with maybe a new guy behind center. I got to do more practice report reading on that and how that's coming along. And, you know, finally, I hate playing on MAC teams in bowl season. I just think the conference compared to when I was there and I attended, when they had, you know, guys like Byron Leftwich and Chad Pennington and Ben Roethlisberger, and the play that where it was 15, 20 years ago, right now it's nowhere near that. And I just think, generally speaking, MAC teams and bowl games are a net negative. But we'll see. Maybe you want a friendly wager? Current line, 3.5?
That's fine. Yeah, we can do that.
Split the difference. Wait, you bet 4 and I bet 3, right?
Yeah, I got 4.5. Yeah, 3. Let's
do 3.5 then.
I'm fine with 3.5. I mean, look, here's another angle to this game. I don't know how many people realize this, but Central Michigan is actually 42nd in the country in yards per play allowed on defense. And I get, you know, they played in the MAC, and the MAC doesn't have a lot of great teams. But when you consider that this was, you know, a decent defense last year, the offense was just so bad that there wasn't much that they could really do about it. Their red zone defense is atrocious. They've given up points on 43 of 46 opponents' trips into the red zone, 32 of those touchdowns. But San Diego State doesn't get to the red zone a whole lot, and their touchdown percentage in the red zone, 127th in the country at 42.5%. They better get 7 when they get down there, because I think Central Michigan can move the football on them.
Good point there. But I just, from what I saw in the MAC title game, the way Miami of Ohio really muddled that game up, I just thought watching that, I'm like, how does San Diego State not play a very similar style to what Miami of Ohio just did against Central in that upset? And it's not going to look pretty in the box score, but I think it's a very similar style play game than what we just saw in the MAC championship game.
Hey, if San Diego State runs the opening kick back to the 5-yard line, you know, then I'll probably start being a little bit more worried about, you know, my thoughts on this one. But yeah, no, I agree. I mean, that was one, you know, Miami of Ohio is kind of, I guess, the San Diego State of the MAC. I guess we could kind of call them that. You know, they're not a great offensive team, pretty good defensive team. They did hold Central Michigan down. So yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting one. We'll split the difference at 3.5, and you'll owe me dinner again. So it'd be perfect.
All right. We'll add that up.
That's yeah, right.
It's gonna be wine and dining you for an entire week at this point.
That's all right. I'll be a cheap date for you, I promise. All right. so I've got a position on Central Michigan. You've got a position on SMU. You notice neither one of these are numbers grabs for us. These are both, you know, true positions based on sides that we like here. Did you make any numbers grabs, or are your other positions, you know, just kind of things that you like where, you know, you like the side and you think the line's gonna move?
I'll be perfectly frank. I mean, as much as I've appreciated Circa throughout the course of the season, getting early number grabs, I had a few, like Texas A&M -4, and it's up to 7. That was a numbers grab for me. I was closer to the 7 where it's currently at now. That was one. I grabbed Washington early, right around 3 against Boise State. That was until I saw that 2 of Washington's best players were going to sit out for the game. So, I mean, that's certainly a concern, and maybe I'm a little more cautious than what I would have been 5 years ago, because a lot of these players announce the lead up to the bowl games that they're not going to play. Yeah, not as much as what I normally do. And, you know, other numbers grabs I would have had. I mean, boy, if you don't have maybe a bot, or if you're not, you know, got a quick trigger on those bowl games with Circa, you can miss out within 5 to 10 minutes. On a lot of big time line moves. I mean, the other major position I've taken, it's not going to be a surprise, but I'm taking Iowa State against Notre Dame. You look at yards per play, pretty similar between the two teams, but Iowa State played a much tougher schedule than Notre Dame. And I am not a fan of what's going on offensively with them parting ways with Chip Long. I mean, to me, putting the blame on him, it's not Chip Long's issue. It's a Brian Kelly issue, why that offense has never really taken off in 10 years now for Notre Dame. I just think it's going to be probably one of those pros versus Joes games of the year in the bowls, because public's going to see a 10-2 Notre Dame team laying a very short number against 7-5 Iowa State. I really like Iowa State +3.5, and they will have the crowd edge in that game. They will travel extremely well. That's why the Camping World Bowl took Iowa State over Texas because of their fans traveling.
Well, and I think the important thing about that game, too, is that right now it looks like Matt Campbell's not going anywhere. You know, USC sticking with Clay Helton. Florida State, I think Mike Norvell's a great hire. I really like that fit down there in Tallahassee. But looks like Matt Campbell staying right where he is again. So, you know, I mean, that's a huge feather in Iowa State's cap because we all know that, I mean, he's a phenomenal college football head coach. Unless he winds up going to the NFL, and I don't think he's really at that point yet, should be there on the sideline for that one. So that's something, again, and that's the hard part, right? You want to grab some of these numbers before they move, but we're talking about players that could sit out. We're talking about offensive linemen that could sit out, change the complexion of the game, won't impact the line at all, but could just change the way that the game is played out. Coordinators, you know, Oregon now not having offensive coordinator Marcus Arroyo, who's going to go to UNLV, be the head coach there. Coordinators make a big difference at this time of the year too,
because they do.
The head coach is out there trying to close recruits. The coordinators are game planning for the bowl game and also recruiting at the same time. You know, Clemson loses Jeff Scott. First time Dabo's lost a coordinator in a long time. I don't know if that matters so much for them because they're going to.
He's still going to split duties.
Okay.
But if you listen to guys, Kirby Smart, I think his quote was, it was the toughest month of his entire life trying to, you know, coordinate and put a staff together and start recruiting for your other job. I couldn't imagine the hours, probably 100-hour work weeks.
No, what do you mean you can't imagine that? That's what you do.
Well, yeah, I mean, but I don't have, you know, the pressure that they do. I put a hell of a lot of pressure on myself, but I couldn't imagine that the stakes there. I would probably die of a heart attack.
Are there any other games that, as you kind of look at them here, you know, again, we talk about motivation, the importance of that, and we try to read as much as we can into motivation. The harsh reality is we don't really know until the game starts. We have our ideas, we have our thoughts, our theories. We don't really know until the game starts if that team's going to show up or not. And even if they don't show up in the first half, they may very well show up in the second half. Do you see any substantial motivation mismatches on the card right now?
Well, the market's telling us one huge mismatch, and that's the money that's pouring in on Louisiana Tech with Miami only laying 6 now. I mean, that's my biggest overlay in my power ratings right now. Even though I've been relatively high on Louisiana Tech, I know it's close to home for them and even shade them a little bit of home field. If you're taking cues and indicators from the market, that one right there is telling you that Miami – and we've seen a Miami team struggle this year in the favorite role, struggle in the past with questionable motivation in bowl games. You go to that, I go way back to that Nevada game that they played. They had no business didn't want to be there. A Sun Bowl game where it was really cold against Notre Dame. They didn't want to be there, Miami. So the market's telling you Miami's not going to be motivated. The fact that that line's only 6.
What do you have? I have that one 10.
Yeah, I got a 10. So, I mean, and I – That's pretty much my biggest disparity as far as, you know, obviously my power ratings on the line right now. And I haven't bet Miami because it doesn't look like this. It doesn't look like the La Tech money is slowing down anytime soon. But I'll talk myself into betting Miami. Sometimes I think the market gets a little too cute and they forget that sometimes these games are decided by the Jimmies and the Joes.
Yeah, I mean, that's one where, again, I mean, that's got to be a motivation-based line move. Unless somebody knows something about someone at Miami sitting out, I mean, the talent disparity in that game is off the charts. I mean, it's a talent mismatch all the way around. Maybe not necessarily a coaching mismatch. I don't know how good Manny Diaz is, but...
It wasn't a good look. I'd take Skip Holtz over him right now. Keep in mind that Manny Diaz was on Skip Holtz's staff as a defense coordinator.
Isn't Skip Holtz, like, outstanding in bowl games? Or am I thinking of somebody
He's
else?
He's really good in bowl games, so that might be another reason.
I'll throw one more at you here, and then we'll transition over to the NFL side. I want to make sure we hit on some games there. This is one where I don't get the line moving. I'm hoping you can explain it to me because I'm a dumbass and I can't figure it out. Game 227-228 is North Carolina and Temple. Line down from 6 to as low as 4 out there, and 4, really the prevailing number market-wide now. Why? What am I missing here? Because I like North Carolina in this game.
Oh, wow. You know what? I'm going to look at that one. That's one that I wasn't surprised by it. Pure power rating for me. No, you're right.
Jeez. I have it 6.5 in the military.
Yeah, I'm way above too, looking at it.
Rod Carey blows in bowl games. I mean, I know it was the MAC. I know it was Northern Illinois, and sometimes they were kind of punching above their weight class. But I mean, the guy's not good at it. Like, and it's not even just that they lost; they got blown out in a lot of those.
Yeah, I'm in the 7.5 range, but you know, just real quick, Bill Connolly, who I really expect his SP plus, only has it like 1. Wow. Jeff Stagrin, who can impact the market from time to time, only has it 4. So that's why I didn't catch my eye. I looked at everyone's power ratings and mine when I was making some early bowls. Just betting, I mean, the early lines came out. I was just betting my power ratings and just doing a quick comparison to what else was out there in the marketplace. But that's why I didn't line up and bet, didn't take a big position on North Carolina. Plus, the line was 6, so it wasn't big enough for me to take a big position on the Tar Heels. But that might be a reason why the two respected power ratings out there in the marketplace are under the current number of 4.5.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, and this is one of those, though, for me, where, you know, we talk about the strength of coordinators. Obviously, everyone talks head coaches. I like Phil Longo, and I love Jay Bateman. And they've got plenty of time to prep for a Temple team that is good. It's not great. And again, going up against Rod Carey, I'm wondering, can I milk a 3.5 out of this, do you think?
Ooh. It's possible. Now, I wouldn't. I don't think that's going to be the case. But maybe. I mean, they just bet percentages. It looks like they're relatively split right now. I don't think you're going to get a 3.5.
That's fine. I'll take 4. I'll take 4 and trust my handicap and see what happens with it. You know, and that's a big thing here, too, when it comes to the bowl season. You know, if things are moving against you, and obviously, you know, anytime things move against our numbers, we're like, what's going on? What are we missing? What's happening here? You know, I mean, at this point in time, you've done your work for 4 months, well, 4+ months. You know, if you did summer work like you and I did, trust your damn numbers, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's just moving. Yeah,
that's a lesson that I need to, going back full circle to the first question you asked me on this segment. That's probably takeaway number one for me. I got to trust my numbers more, because if I had just trusted my numbers like I should have, it wouldn't have been a great season, but we'd have been treading above water. It would have been okay.
Yeah. And I get it. I mean, there are unquantifiable factors all over the place in the bowl season, and you want to be aware of them. But, you know, if it's a live move that gets into a range where you just say, well, I've got to take this, then go ahead and take it. You know, don't be scared of what's going on out there. Maybe your number's wrong. Maybe you missed something and you wind up losing a bet, but you know, you're also going to win your fair share of those too.
Nah, absolutely. You are. Fine line you got to walk with this time of year.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And we'll talk plenty more about the bowl season with Brad Powers as we go forward here throughout the month of December. And of course, you know, be able to talk some of those bowl games in early January as well. We transition over to the NFL side of things here now, Brad. And in fact, we've been able to talk about a lot of the NFL card here this week with a limited number of college games. So nice little change of pace there. I'm going to overlap a little bit with some of our previous guests just because I want to get your take on some of the games that we've already discussed. Beginning with 313, 314 here, Houston and Tennessee. Such a fascinating game. First place in the AFC South on the line. Speaking of the line, -3 all week long, but we got some -3, -120, -25s out there. Maybe a 2.5 ends up showing up here, but what do you think about this one?
Tough. I mean, tough handicap. I've been a little anti-Tennessee. Maybe I haven't upgraded them enough with Tannehill at quarterback, although I've watched a lot of these games and I've seen them be fortunate, whether it was the Kansas City game where they had less than a 10% chance to win that game with less than 2 minutes left. Or it was, you know, the Chargers game where the Chargers had what scored like 2-3 times, called back by penalty in that game. And Melvin Gordon ends up fumbling on the 1-yard line. That was a win for them. Even the Indianapolis game, you know, Indy's lining up for a field goal with 5 minutes left to take a lead. They block it, return it for a touchdown. So, I mean, maybe the breakthrough finally came last week. Certainly did it offensively when they had 552 yards, Tennessee. But, you know, just I'm a big guy that likes, if, you know, if something happens on Sunday one way, I like going the other way the next week. And what we saw was a Tennessee team winning by 3 touchdowns and a Houston team that suffered the most embarrassing loss of week 14 last week. So I am leaning towards the Houston side here, +3.
Next game on the board here, 315, 316, is Seattle and Carolina. basically a short week for Seattle here. They play Sunday Night Football. Monday is kind of a waste with the late, you know, the late finish to that game. Then you got to go cross country here to Carolina. And I mean, it looks like the Panthers have quit. Ron Rivera gets fired. They come out, lay an egg last week. Is six too low here? I mean, This looks attractive, feels attractive. A lot of people are going to wind up teasing Seattle down to a pick 'em, which you don't get a whole lot of equity if you're not getting 7 and 3. But I mean, how can you back Carolina here? I mean, can you?
You can't. You just can't. Because, I mean, there is that question. That, I mean, there's a good chance that they did quit because they looked like it last week against Atlanta. The problem why it's not higher is I think Seattle's generally overrated. I mean, what are they, like 8-1 in this in games decided by 7 points or less? And people will say, well, that's not so random because you got Russell Wilson at quarterback. Coming into this year, if you looked at Seattle's record in games decided by 7 points or less in the Russell Wilson era, 7 years, 2012 to 2018, Seattle actually had a losing record in close games. So wow. I think generally speaking, Seattle's overrated. That's why, you know, I'm certainly leaning Seattle because I think there is a chance that Carolina just quit on the season because, honestly, with new owner David Tepper, chances are he's cleaning house. So players got to worry about their jobs, you know, staff members, assistant coaches, everybody in that room could be out the door, a total rebuild for them next year, in my opinion. But I just think Seattle's generally overrated. And I mean, you just lost Penny, your running back for the season. I know they got Carson, but. And that's why I haven't lined up and made a monster bet on Seattle.
Yeah, it's tough. And again, I mean, we get this late in the year here. I mean, some of these guys, again, we talk about individual and team motivations in the bowl season. You get a lot of individual motivations in the NFL because guys want to get paid. You know, they're going to free agency as much guaranteed money as they possibly can. But on a team level, not everyone's going to buy in. And that's a spot in the NFL where, you know, if you got a couple of guys that aren't buying in, it becomes painfully obvious that they're just not there and bad things happen with those teams. So that is a real tough one, but that stat about Russ, I mean, you know, Russ is phenomenal. And this defense has been kind of in a tailspin for the last, you know, really 3 or 4 years as some of those guys aged out of the team and, you know, they kind of tried to rebuild on the fly, stuff like that. You'd feel like Russ was carrying them a little bit more in those close games. I'm really surprised to hear that.
Yeah, 31-33, 2012 to 2018, games decided by 7 points or less.
Wow. All right, then. Well, of course, one of those was the Super Bowl when, you know, Marshawn Lynch should have run the football, but of course, wound up not doing so. Let's talk Buffalo and Pittsburgh here. The Sunday Nighter, Pittsburgh, 1.5-point favorite in this one. Buffalo, a team akin to Seattle that people don't really believe in a whole lot. Pittsburgh just, you know, duct tape and tongue depressors kind of holding this thing together, and Mike Tomlin's done a phenomenal job doing that. What about this one? Where this line, I think you could make an argument that it looks cheap on the Pittsburgh side, but maybe that's by design?
Maybe, but, you know, you look at public betting percentages, they're all over Buffalo in this game. You know what I found? You're in the Super Contest, right?
Yeah, I'm not doing great. I'm 500, but yeah.
I think they shaded that. This was stunning to me. What, they shade this Pittsburgh 2.5? When the market's sitting at you know, 1.5, 2, normally when they shade something, it's, you know, more often than not on the dog. And you know, to me, it seems like, you know, it does seem like despite the public betting percentages we see out there right now, I mean, it would seem like a lot of people would rather bet Pittsburgh in this game. I found that relatively surprising that they shaded Pittsburgh 2.5 here. Not that 2 is important or anything like that, but, you know, I'm more on the under here. I know this seems obvious, but sometimes the obvious plays win. I mean, it's only the fourth time in the last 5 years we've had a total this low, but the two teams are combined 20-6 to the under this year. Buffalo's been involved in two of those three really low totals in the last 5 years this year, and both have went under. I'm under 36, and I still lean Pittsburgh, to be perfectly frank. Looks like Juju Smith-Schuster and Connor are going to play. So maybe that even goes against my under recommendation.
Yeah, that's one of those things, too, where one of the things I've noticed in the NFL, and if you take totals of 38 or lower since 2015, 34-26 to the under, so that's about roughly 57% there. One of the things I've noticed about the NFL, and I haven't run it for this year, but I noticed that, know, the previous 4 or 5 years, when a game was supposed to be high scoring, it was, you know, totals up in the upper 50s. And when it was supposed to be really low scoring, you know, 39 or below, 40 or below, it generally was. So again, this total is not, you know, there for no reason. It's just one of those things where, you know, the expectation here is for a very low scoring game.
You make an excellent point. So when you have these outlier totals, these, you know, really low totals or really high ones, I think sometimes the market's a little conservative, you know, especially in the NFL where there shouldn't be very high variance compared to what a college football totals line could be, anywhere from, you know, 38 to 78. You just obviously don't see that in the NFL. And I think, you know, maybe the bookmakers, maybe the professional bettors, you know, there's at least some out there that have a drag. Well, I can't, you know, the expected total in the NFL should be between 45, 46, 47. And I got a hard time, you know, betting the under on something that's 37, 36 in today's day and age, and vice versa. It's tough for these bookmakers to set a line with, you know, a totals line at 57 or 58 in the NFL, just because you're so accustomed to not seeing it.
I will say this, and actually let me fix that. 17 and 13 to the under. Totals of 38 or lower since 2015. The Killer Sports database just shows you all the games. It winds up doubling up the side, so you have to put in an extra step in the query. So again, that's 17 and 13 to the under 38 or lower here since 2015. I will say this. If I can find a good complement to it, I will be teasing Buffalo plus 7.5. I mean, low scoring game. Expectation being that it's a tight game, that it gets no better than that in the NFL as far as a leg of a teaser goes. The problem is I just got to find something else to put with it.
Oh, why not Chargers plus 8.5?
Because I think there's a chance Minnesota blows them out.
Yeah, all right. What about a teaser card? Because I see Penny's dealing New Orleans 8. Why not the Saints 2.5?
Yeah, that's not bad. Yeah, that's not bad at all. I'd be surprised if the Saints lose that game. So that's one that I think it's a good one. Good looking.
Or maybe
out,
even the Cardinals plus 8.5. I don't know if I trust the Cardinals. I mean, Cleveland to me could be high variance, but you know, good or bad. Mm.
Well, I was going to ask you about that one, the Cleveland Arizona game. That one, you know, Cleveland up to 2.5 out there in the market. I mean, obviously we saw Pittsburgh go out there, take care of business. A little bit of a dicey game, and they could have played better than they did, but they still came away with the must-win situation and got the win. Cleveland in a must-win situation, too. Got to figure Baker's hand is better after 2 weeks, but, I mean, he was a debacle last week against Cincinnati. But Arizona, I mean, it seems like it's no longer working with Cliff Kingsbury.
Great point, especially offensively. You look at the splits. First six games of the season, Arizona was averaging 377 yards per game offensively. You stack rank that with the season averages. Number 7, offense, yards per game in the NFL. Last 7 games, though, 279 yards per game offensively. Stack rank that, it's number 30. So went from having a top 10 offense to having a bottom 3 offense here. First half compared to second half of the season. I haven't heard too much of this, but I think Baker's going to be motivated this week. He should. Why? Go back to college. What was one of those head coaches that didn't give him a scholarship? Cliff Kingsbury at Texas Tech. And that was after Baker was named the Big 12 Freshman of the Year and wouldn't get offered a scholarship by Cliff Kingsbury. Now, in Kingsbury's defense, he had a quarterback in line to take over the reins. You might have heard of him. His name's Patrick Mahomes, who is going to go out and end up in being the starter. But, you know, Baker was so upset he transferred to Oklahoma after that freshman season at Texas Tech. So I think there'll be a little bit of, you know, maybe a little bad blood, because Baker seems to be the type that would hold a grudge.
Who was that quarterback? I don't think I've heard of him before.
Yeah, Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, who's he play for?
I think Kansas City, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Can't believe I've never heard of that guy. You talked him up like he's, you know, some sort of phenomenal quarterback or something. I've never heard of him. Hmm. But look, you know, the thing about that Browns-Arizona game is this. Kyler Murray's been sacked a ton. And I kind of liked Arizona a little bit last week. But then as I thought more about it, Pittsburgh's pass rush was going to get there. And it was just a matter of how much damage it would wind up doing. If Cleveland had Garrett and everybody was healthy, I mean, that's a slam dunk for me because they're going to get to Kyler Murray because everybody else has been.
Yeah.
This week, I'm not so sure. I don't know how deep Cleveland's problems run. Like, it feels like Pittsburgh has completely rallied together around the injuries, around the quarterback switch, around this, around that, around Mike Tomlin. The Browns, I mean, it's you know, every man for himself. So I don't really know about that situation and how it impacts not just this game, but let's say they lose this game. What happens the next 2 weeks? You know,
they lose this game, they're a fade. You got to go against them.
I want to get your thoughts on this one because I kind of like this game. And another one that the Westgate Super Contest shaded a little bit. Atlanta and San Francisco, Westgate shaded this down to 10.5. And obviously, you know, not that 11 is a key number or anything, but I'd rather have 11.5 in the Super Contest than 10.5. But it is 10.5 there. Not really 10.5 anywhere but bookmaker out in the market right now, at least as far as offshores go. A lot of 11s. What do you think about that one?
I love Atlanta. And maybe call me old school here, but I just think it might be the biggest flat spot of the entire NFL season. And specifically, I'm talking San Francisco here. I mean, think about it. Last three games for them, Green Bay on Sunday Night Football, hell of a performance by the 49ers. They play Baltimore to the very end. They gave Baltimore a better game than anybody has, at least in the 8-9 game winning streak for the Ravens. And then last week, I mean, what people call a game of the year, you're going back and forth with the Saints on the road. And then you look at what's on deck for them, Rams, Seahawks. I mean, how could they not have, you know, maybe a little bit of a lackluster effort here? And you look at the injuries. I think Sherman's out. Dee Ford's going to be out for them. I think one of their offensive linemen got injured for them, Richburg, out for the 49ers. And I think Atlanta's perfectly capable offensively coming through the back door, getting double digits here. I'm all over the Falcons, my favorite play of the week.
Yeah, one of mine too. Definitely one that's going to be on my Super Contest card here. And again, you can hear that segment tomorrow on Bang the Book Radio. One more that I want to ask you about here. Rams now a road favorite in Dallas. Big line move, big swing here in this game. Everyone's back on the Sean McVay train, and nobody wants any piece of Dallas right now. Or maybe somebody does. Are you one of those somebodies, or are you just going to stay off of this one?
I'm going to stay off. I'm going to wait, though. I mean, it looks like there's nothing stopping this line from maybe even going higher. So, you know, maybe tease Dallas. I mean, they might be an option because if I can get them at 7.5, because I'm seeing there's 1.5 now at Westgate on the Rams. There's a big group in town there betting the Rams, a big poker group of young guys in town that have been winning this year, and they're putting some serious coin on this game. I got word yesterday that they're on the Rams here. So if you're looking to bet the Cowboys, I think wait. Looks like Rams money is not slowing down anytime soon. I think I can at least talk myself into maybe some teasers with Dallas if I can get them up over 7.
Speaking of things that don't slow down anytime soon, Brad Powers, professional handicapper over at bradpowerssports.com, still burning that midnight oil with regularity here for the college football bowl season and also the rest of the NFL on all the way through the Super Bowl. What's going on over at the website right now, man?
Yeah, right now you can sign up and get the newsletter. And obviously it's 3 weeks left of the NFL season, only Army-Navy when it comes to college football, but you get a selection on all 39 bowl games. And I treat the bowl games not that I don't do every single game, but I put a play out on every single one of the 39 bowl games. I know you're going to want a little bit of action. It's not like I put games of the year on all those plays, but I do take them very seriously, and I've had great success with the bowl games the last 4 or 5 years handicapping. And if you want to pick on all 39 bowl games, Army-Navy, last 3 weeks of the NFL, and obviously the NFL playoffs through the Super Bowl, it's called the Powers Picks Newsletter. It's $49 for the rest of the season. But check it before you even decide to pay. Check it out. There's all these issues, past issues. Download them for free and see what I'm all about. And if you like what you see, $49, bradpowersports.com.
And make sure you follow Brad on Twitter, at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, appreciate your time as always, my friend. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, sounds good. Take care, man.
There you go. There's Brad Powers again, professional handicapper over at bradpowersports.com and at Brad Powers and the number 7 on Twitter. Coming up on our Friday edition of the show, Westgate Super Contest selection segment for week 15. The mini contest starts here this week in the Super Contest. And I'll also give you my thoughts on the Circa Million as well. Then we'll finish up this week on the show with Brent, the head risk manager from DSI Sportsbook, with this week's version of the odds report. We'll talk some early sharp money in the Bulls, talk some sharp money for week 15 in the NFL. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.